to talk about today is sort of a backdoor about policy. And when Glenn asked if I could talk about policy, it's like, could I talk about my research instead and then find some way to talk about something I know a little bit about but something I don't know very much about at all. So I beg your indulgence with that while I take you on a journey. And it's fitting that we're in Seattle because some of what I want to talk to you about today has to do with the state of Washington. And when I thought about big science, I thought about Loring Anderson, and I was going to have everybody walk out today with Loring Anderson saying big science because I thought it was an appropriate sense. One of the things that I take a look at is the disjuncture between big science and little science. And what I'm going to talk to you about today is what has happened with the policy decision that has affected rural Indian tribes here in Washington and Oregon over a policy dispute about science. And what has happened in the public discourse over this issue is that science gets deployed as being either big science or religion or little science or anti-science. So that's what I hope to talk about today. Lori said, big science, hallelujah, every man for himself. So the question of the day when you leave is that true? Is it every man for himself? So that's the question on the table. I can't answer it for you, but you can ask it of yourself. So the title is Dynamics and Challenges, Creating Science-Based Public Policy. And like I said, what I would like to do is go through the back door to tell you a little bit about how policy did not work. It's the Kendrick Man study. You might have heard about it, but I'll give you a little nickel version of it. Go back to the year 1996, it's a hot July day at the confluence of the Columbia River in the state of Washington. And two Washington State students decide that they're not going to pay the fee to get into the boat races, so they go take a round trip by the Columbia River to sneak into the boat races, and the problem is they've been drinking a little bit of beer, so they're not quite sober when one of them steps on what it turns out to be a human skull in the Columbia River. They don't report it right away because they've been drinking, so they wait as long as they can and then report it to local officials, and what they discover is a skeleton that's the oldest ever found in North America that's intact. It's about 9,200 years old, give or take. A couple hundred years. So it begins a controversy here in Washington, but in Oregon as well, over who has the rights to study this old bag of bones. And what happened locally in Kennewick, Washington, was there just happened to be a freelance forensic anthropologist standing by, who they could call on and say, can you take a look at this, you know, skeleton for us? And at first, the anthropologist, his name is James Chatters, thought, well, it must be a pioneer who came to an untimely end. But the more he looked at it, the more he said, I'm not sure that that's actually right. So he sent a piece off for carbon dating, and that's when they discovered that this skeleton is really, really old. Well, the Kennewick officials did the right thing in the sense that there was a statute, there's a piece of policy called the Native American Graves and Repatriation Act. I'll show you a little bit about that. And so they called the local Indian tribes because there's this legislation in place that says if you find bones or artifacts, you don't get to take it to the museum or you don't get to put it on the black market. You're supposed to take it back to the tribes, dude. Right? So in 1996, the legislation itself had just begun to get started. And I was lucky enough to work at the Smithsonian and ask people, so how's it going? Has this been an effective piece of legislation? And when it started, the folks at the Smithsonian went out and tried to find tribal members to come back and claim ancestors and claim bones because they just didn't have the momentum. But they began to get that in 1996. The local tribes were pissed. They wanted the skeleton returned and they wanted him returned right away. So they created a coalition of local tribes, six local tribes, who said, bring the skeleton back. And the policymaker said, okay, it's law, right? Bruce Babbitt was the Secretary of the Interior at the time. What I've done is I've taken a look at the public discourse that surrounds this issue because it's so wonderful to see the conflicts about science. And one reporter said that this initial decision to return the skeleton to the tribes was described as bad science.
So you need to add to your vocabulary that there's good science and there's bad science. And if this works, here's a little neck right there.
Your ancestor who's 10,000 years old isn't your ancestor because they don't look like it, right? So it raises these enormous questions about what does it mean to be an American Indian? And the tribes are saying, we know who we are. We don't need you to tell us who we are. The guy was on Indian territory, bring him back. So it didn't matter to them about the biology of it. Leslie Stahl is doing a story, asking him in foreign, so you're saying science doesn't matter. He says, it doesn't matter. If you get the wrong interpretation of that, it's not to say Indians are anti-science, but the issue of concern is not who was here first. The issue of concern is, are you going to honor this policy that says we get the skeleton? That's what this boiled down to. And the important thing about social discourse is that they really set the agenda for what is the issue of concern. And I guarantee you that the tribes that came to court would say, this is not the issue. We already know who we are. Of course, what's really interesting about this whole point is that for those of you who have been reading science in the last couple of issues, there's this new fomentation about the fact that maybe a couple of different kinds of cattle groups really did cross the Bering Strait and come into North America. It's kind of a cool study. But don't tell my Indian relatives that they came over on the Bering Strait, because my great-grandmother said they went the other way. That's a true story, by the way. So, in the Kenner McMahon case, part of the way this was deployed was the world has had a lot of these issues of hundred peoples. This is the main plaintiff in this case. And he said, but that's the reality. Can we resurrect and make history right? I don't think so. I mean, hey, life goes on. It's a really good way to piss off the Indians. So then what happened when the court ruling was made that gave the scientists the ability to study the bones, the Seattle Times said, this was an epic struggle between science and religion, and science won. And all of this is simply an illustration to give you this conflict between science and anti-science. And really, if I asked you to remember anything today besides big science and Star Trek, it would be who is it that gets to set the agenda? So that little issue with Star Trek is that when it came out that these bones did not appear to have an affiliation with modern-day Native Americans, James Chatters held a press conference in which he called the skull Caucasoid, which the New York Times wrote as being Caucasian. So it set off this flurry of who were the American Indians. Anyway, and they said, I didn't mean that. What I meant to say is he looks like Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart is the actor from the British Isles who plays a Star Trek captain from the future on television. So it just sort of makes everything a little bit weird. So if you're confused, I am too. But that's where we are, and that's my story. Thank you.
Something else, as long as it doesn't hurt. Yeah.
You
What's in the bones of Kennewick Manor at birth?
Yeah.
So does that mean the University of Washington owns?
No, I think they're just there, yeah, who owns them?
Yeah, I think they're just
there. They're there on repository until the scientists are able to say we've got enough. And then at that point, the hope is that they'll be returned to the tribes. And the tribes, by the way, are, you know, still back in court saying, it's taking too long.
But that's never going to end because science continues, you know, there's imaging, there's genomic sequencing, genome DNA, there's...
There'll be something else in the future.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, so I don't know. Are we good?
One question. So I gathered from your presentation that the journalist sort of lined up this, on the side of, was representing the side of science.
I would say that typically, I mean, that's a pretty black and white way of describing it. And I do that, by the way. I'm not saying you do that, but in our analysis of that, that's what we found. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but one is that their perspectives are rarely questioned by journalists. And so what happens is you get this sort of black and white coverage of us versus them. And, you know, it's just they're lazy. You know, and I'm a former journalist, so I get to say that. You know, it's like,
well,
get the conflict. Yeah, exactly. And that sort of sets the day. And it's a pity because it really is not a black and white issue. Thank you.